Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. Welcome in, America. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. It is good to have you in. Nick Wright in 30 minutes. Joy Taylor is joining me also. 1 hour from now, The Herd Hierarchy. I'm doing the radio show, the TV show from the radio studio because of an abundance of caution. We had a little Fox Sunday stuff. We had somebody test positive, even though I've tested negative 3 times a week since then. We're just going to be cautious. I'm going to move over to the radio side today, tomorrow, yesterday. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm great. That was a great game last night. Not quite the ending Tom Brady was looking for. But.
No, yeah. It's interesting. So, Joy, I think you and I are alike in this regard. Is it DNA? Is it parenting? I don't know. I'm not a stubborn guy. Like, if something doesn't work, I move off it. Because losing's embarrassing. Nobody likes to lose. In sports, in life, nobody likes to lose. So I don't really get stubborn people that go back to the same old thing when it doesn't work. Is it ego? Is it? I don't know what it is. I don't have it in me. I can't explain stuff that I don't embrace. And so stubborn guy, I don't get. I never have. Politically, I'd vote either side. Candidates bad. I'm not in Cub Scouts. I don't wear a hat and a uniform. I'm not 12 years old. I'll go to the other side. If something's not working, I'll go to the other side. I own me. You don't own me. I'm always trying to be flexible because I want to win. Last night, Sean McVay, flexible coach. Bruce Arians, inflexible coach. I'll give you an example. So it wasn't a perfect night for the Rams. They went on the road. They could not run the football, and they forced their young quarterback to throw 51 times. That is not ideal in the NFL. On the road, good defense, throw it 51 times, you have no running game. But Sean McVay does something, Arians doesn't. Number one, McVay always moves the pocket. What's it do? It keeps the defense on their toes. He has a lot of motion and deception. Slows down the defense, keeps them on their toes. And if the running game's not working and the protection's suboptimal, they have a lot of safety valves and dump-off plays. Bruce Arians, let's do more deep balls. 66 plays by Tampa, 6 had motion. I mean, at some point, Bruce Arians, look around the league. Put guys in motion. Be deceptive. I know you can't roll the pocket with Brady. But you didn't roll it much with Jameis Winston, who's much more athletic than Brady. 66 plays, 6 were in motion. And I watched that game last night, and my take was that was a coaching mismatch. Tom Brady was 1-for-9 with 2 picks on throws over 15 yards. That's not what works for Tom Brady. That's never been what works for Tom Brady. Tom Brady likes to control with highly efficient, high-percentage throws. Bruce Arians lives on throw it up in the air. And by the way, Tampa came into the game missing their best offensive lineman. So you know you're probably and facing Aaron Donald, knowing you're probably going to get less time to throw. And by the way, there were the makings of a bad game for the Rams. They couldn't run the football. They're on the road. It's Monday Night Football. You're facing the GOAT and a good defense, and you ask Goff to throw 51 times. But there were two head coaches. One had safety valves. Cooper Kupp, 11 catches. Like, I just thought it was a coaching mismatch. Now, it should be noted, Tampa's 7-4. They're 11 weeks in. I went this morning and checked. I predicted they would be a wild card team and go 10-6. So if you look at their schedule, they look like they're actually going to go 11-5. But what would concern me if you're Tampa, if you look at the NFC playoff picture right now, it's a bunch of smart offensive coaches. It's Sean Payton. It's Cliff Kingsbury. It is Sean McVay. It is Matt LaFleur. these guys are much more motion, much more deception, much more roll the pocket. It's a very much a 2020 NFL game. And you can blame Tom Brady for all these interceptions, but I went and looked this up this morning. The three previous jobs Bruce Arians had, the starting quarterback had a career high in interceptions. Jameis Winston had 30, Carson Palmer 22, and Andrew Luck 18. And Tom Brady's on pace to have 15, a career high. So that would be four straight quarterbacks who have their career high in interceptions. I'm over no biscuit, no risk it. I'm over it. Like it's low percentage throws that did not describe the New England dynasty. It was high percentage throws. McVay, high percentage throws. Lower percentage throws equals less efficient, equals less consistent. If you start looking at what Tampa Bay is right now, you don't know. Every week it changes. Why? Because they run so many low percentage offensive plays, and so much of it is dependent on protection and who your opponent is. So you can blame Brady for all the picks, but Andrew Luck, Carson Palmer, Jameis Winston, and Brady are all going to have career highs in picks with Bruce Arians. And I watch McVay. He moves the pocket. He's got a lot of motion. There's constant deception. It keeps the defense on their heels. And if it breaks down for Goff, if the protection breaks down, he's got safety valves. Here's Arians after the loss.
I thought he called a good ball game. We got to execute better. You know, when guys are open, we got to hit them, and we can't misread coverage. We got to protect a little bit better when we do have guys deep, and let him hit that guy. Instead of have that pressure that cost us an interception.
Maybe it's not always the pressure that causes the interception. So I was looking at the standings this morning. And, you know, we're 10, 11 weeks in. And this is about the time we all kind of know who's really good and who's really bad. And there's a bunch of stuff in the middle that'll sort itself out. But I think there's an understanding in the AFC that Kansas City and the Steelers are the best two teams. And I would not deny that. I think Pittsburgh wishes they could run the football more consistently. But if you look at the AFC playoff picture, I don't think anybody denies this. The Steelers and the Chiefs are the two best teams. But when you go over to the NFC playoff picture, the people go, oh, there's a lot of Packers, the Eagles. No. I think we now know who the two best teams are. The Saints and the Rams. And I say that because when I watched the Rams last night, everybody in the NFC right now, there's an issue. Seattle, no pass rush, struggles in the secondary. Green Bay doesn't play well when it's physical football. Tampa Bay, old school head coach. It's a lot about the matchups, inconsistent week to week. Arizona, young, but still feels like they're a draft away from competing defensively. Philadelphia, Giants, don't waste my time. The Rams and the Saints are the only two teams in the NFC, like the Steelers and the Chiefs. What's their hole? Both have good special teams. Both have a pass rush. Both have good secondaries. Both have coaches who have gotten to a Super Bowl. I don't have a coaching issue. I don't have a defense issue. I don't have a back-end secondary issue. I don't have a special team issue. Both have above-average offensive lines. Both can run the football on most Sundays, and if they can't, they can throw the football. The knock on the Saints is they don't throw it down the field much. All right, but they went 13-3, 13-3 the last 2 years, and they're now 6-0 with backup quarterbacks. It's not killing them. And the Rams, when Goff doesn't get great protection, he got pretty good protection last night, he can struggle. Welcome to the NFL. That was true of Brady and Peyton Manning in their prime. When I look at the Rams and the Saints and the Chiefs and the Steelers, I don't see a hole. Again, I wish Pittsburgh could run the football more consistently. I wish Andrew Whitworth was healthy at left tackle, and Goff does need to be comfortable. He was last night. The Saints don't throw it downfield as well as I'd like. In Kansas City, they fall into traps a lot, falling behind, but the good news is they can always catch up. I mean, they've all got something they could be better at. But you start looking at the other teams, like Green Bay. They can't play physical football. Seattle, they can't stop anybody. You know, Baltimore doesn't play well from behind. I think we have a Final Four. I think we know who the four best teams in the NFL are right now. And it takes a while to figure it out. And I think most of you agree with the first three, and a lot of you disagree with the Rams, because the Rams aren't a real popular historic franchise. They weren't popular in St. Louis. I mean, they're the second or third most popular team in Los Angeles, and that's saying something as an NFL franchise. But I got to tell you something. They draft incredibly well. The receiving core, the coach, the O-line, tight ends, running back, secondary. Their linebacking core is okay. Everything else, they're good. They can match up with anybody. They're good. That's what I see. Coming up next, Trent Dilfer doesn't hammer many people on my show, but he did yesterday. And he brings up a point about how you coach and how we should coach. But you got to be careful. The NFL's not the NBA, but how hard can you coach somebody? That and the Herd Hierarchy, top of next hour, and Nick Wright, too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Good to have you in. Top of next hour, The Herd Hierarchy. By the way, take time to change your wireless provider. Go to Pure Talk. Don't have to change your phone and your number. $20 a month, that's it. Grab your phone, dial #250 and say my name, Colin Cowherd. If you say that, you get 50% off additionally in the first month. Pure Talk. Joy Taylor, Eric Dickerson later today. So I'm going to throw this at you. So I watched the game like you did last night. By the way, I had a chicken pot pie for dinner. Rando, I know. I may only eat that going forward in my life. Totally rando, I know. So Tampa's an ensemble cast. Am I being too critical of Bruce Arians? Just think about this. So the NFL's a weekly business. Every week you have a game. In the movie business, it takes 6 months to get 1 2-hour movie. That's not the NFL business. That's more like the World Cup. But in the NFL business and in the TV show business, you get 4 days to work on one show. And then right after it's done, you get 4 or 5 more days to work on another show. And most of the television shows, even the good ones, Succession, Breaking Bad, Parks and Recreation, Seinfeld, Everybody Loves Raymond, like legendary shows, it took till year 2, 3 for it to pop. This is an ensemble cast. It's a bunch of coaches, Gronk, Brady, Arians, new quarterback coach, thrown together with no preseason. And they're on their way to be 10-6. Good, not great. Isn't maybe that what they're destined to be in year one? And this was always bound to be better in year two. I mean, one of the cast members, AB, joined the show mid-season. One of them, Leonard Fournette, joined the show right as they were starting filming. No preseason, 3.5 months in. Old school coach, old school quarterback. That sounds like 10-6. It doesn't sound like the Kansas City Chiefs. So, you know, again, the NFL is like the TV business, not the movie business. You prep for 4 days, you get a show. Okay, it's done. Let's not celebrate. Prep for 4 days. And by the way, a lot of those shows, Seinfeld, Everybody Loves Raymond, Breaking Bad, Succession, Parks and Recreate, funny 1 week, flat the next. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. No direction the next. That's what Tampa Bay is. Most of us had them at 10-6. You predicted them 9-7 and 10-6. I predicted them at 10-6. I've said this before. With parenting, the days are long, but the years fly by. In the NFL, the games are crazy, but the season's predictable. I mean, look who's in first place right now. Kansas City, Green Bay Packers, Seattle Seahawks are a playoff team. So are McVay and the Rams. We all predicted Buffalo had a chance to be a playoff team again. Like even the surprise teams, Miami isn't that big of a surprise. So again, when you look at what they are, a weekly business – thrown together with no preseason, maybe I'm too critical. Maybe 9-7. This is not going to be the Chiefs or the Steelers. You don't have the same GM working with the same quarterback and the same coach and the same defense. This isn't Kansas City. This is like year 3 or 4 with these guys. This is what you get when you throw a bunch of guys together. You get good 1 week, awful the next. Really good 1 week, competent the next. That's not good. That's pretty good. Maybe that's just what they're supposed to be in year one. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Tua was benched on Sunday after struggling against the Broncos for most of the game. Brian Flores made it clear that after the loss, it was a performance-based decision for one game and reiterated that he is the starter going forward. Flores said he's a developing player. We have a lot of confidence in him. That's why he's the starter. He played well, and I expect him to continue to play well. I expect him to bounce back.
A developing player.
I don't know. Yes. Exactly. I don't know that everyone's making a massive deal of this.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody overreact. I think everybody's got it. I think we're all looking at it the same way. Tua is young, hadn't played in a year and a half, first road bump. He's fine. Isn't that like everybody? I think that's kind of everybody's take, right?
Well, also, you have to consider the circumstances around the Dolphins this year. They're different than Burrow and Herbert. If Herbert struggles like he did in week 10 in his eighth start when he went 20 of 32, 187 yards, two passing touchdowns and one interception, that's his worst stat line. Joe Burrow, week 5, 19 of 30, 183 yards, one interception, two fumbles, and was sacked 7 times. But those teams are not very much in the playoff space.
Right.
So you can let them continue to start after a bad game because they're developing, and it doesn't matter if you win the next few games, win or lose the next few games. You're not in the playoff hunt. The Dolphins are very much in the playoff hunt. Like, they needed to win that game. And if you put Fitzpatrick in, close the game out because he's going to just continue to get hit, sacked as many times as he was, and he's struggling, win the game, live to talk about it another day, and deal with it next week. So they're in a different circumstance. I think the initial reaction was a little confusing because he looked like he might have been hurt when they took him out, which is obviously a lingering anxiety with Tua based off of how his last season in college ended. But I think everything's going to be fine. And like we said yesterday, Tua is the type of player that can handle this kind of situation.
Yeah.
Not every quarterback can do that. It's often why there's a long discussion about when you start a rookie quarterback, because if he does struggle and need to take him out, does that crush his confidence? I don't think that's the situation with Tua. Plus, they play the Jets this week.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, this is why maturity matters. It's why I didn't like Baker or Jameis Winston out of college. Is that it's hard. Your first 2 years in this league, you get the crap kicked out of you. You're often on a bad team. You get benched. Like, that's why you have to be a grown-up to be a quarterback in the NFL. That's why I'm so harsh on your Johnny Manziels and Baker Mayfields. I'm like, are you emotionally stable and disciplined enough to handle being benched, crushed, hit, and losing a bunch? And I think Tua checks all of those boxes. Herbert and Burrow check all of those boxes.
Yeah, they do. So the Steelers and Ravens are heading into Thursday night's game on very different trajectories. Pittsburgh is undefeated at 10-0, and Baltimore has lost 3 of their last 4 games and are on the outside of the playoffs. But Mike Tomlin isn't concerned about the Ravens heading into this game feeling desperate. He said, "We are all desperate to win this week. We respect everyone and the level of desperation and urgency everyone has as we step into the stadium and are ready to match it." The Ravens are having a very surprising season. They're 6-4. They're 3rd in the AFC North. Obviously, they lost to the Titans last week, 30-24 in overtime on that Derrick Henry run. And it's gotten a little more complicated now because their running backs, Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, are on the COVID list and will not play.
Yeah.
No, so but it's a very much must-win game for the Ravens, just got more interesting.
Yeah, this game historically is always, it's always close. This has been a field goal game most of my last 10 years. It always feels like Ravens-Steelers is a field goal game. So I look at it and I think, oh, Pittsburgh's going to win going away. And then I think it's a short week. Neither team will play great. And by the way, on a short week, you're not going to see any gadgets. These guys are going to go back to the basics on Thursday night. You know, like Arizona-Seattle played. They know each other. They're divisional rivals. Like Seattle-Arizona tend to play close games. I think Baltimore-Pittsburgh will be a very close game. I take Pittsburgh to win it now with the running back issues, but I think we're all freaking out about Baltimore because our expectations were higher. They're like an inch from the playoffs in the AFC. They can change the dynamic and the narrative to Thursday night if they win. Take a deep breath with Baltimore. It's troubling, but they're still okay.
It's certainly troubling. They're in the hunt with the Dolphins at 6-4. The wild card right now is Titans, Browns, and Raiders. And obviously the Steelers, Chiefs, Bills, and Colts are at the top of their divisions. You're absolutely right. If they win this game, we all calm down, everything simmers, and we're having a different conversation about Baltimore. But that's why it's really a must-win game for Baltimore after their last four games.
Yeah.
And it's the Steelers. So like you said, this is a rivalry game, AFC North. These are the two circles on the Steelers and Ravens schedules every year, no matter what. No matter who they're playing that season. But the running back thing is very complicated to me, especially considering, like you said, they're not going to make it extra complicated on a short week, and having Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins out is massive for the Ravens. So Cam Newton has 6 regular season games left on his one-year deal with the Patriots, and when he was asked if he's hoping to stay in New England after the 2020 season, he, in New England-like fashion, avoided giving an answer.
Man, I have interest in winning the Arizona Cardinals game. How about that? There's so many things that I don't want to even harp or dwell or even think. As the Bible says, my runneth over, you know, with just trying to focus on the near future rather than the far future.
Good answer. That's exactly what you should say. That's a perfect answer. Exactly what you should say.
It's a perfect New England answer, but it's an all-around good answer. That's not what Cam Newton is thinking about right now. And obviously, before he was taken out due to COVID, we were having completely different conversations about Cam Newton and the Patriots. I think overall, the bigger picture is, what is Bill Belichick's plan long-term for the Patriots? They have 7 picks in the upcoming draft, and, you know, depending on how much they're able to move, Cam Newton might not be the worst option for them for another year. Now, I do think that there's going to be a lot more movement at the quarterback position, similar to this past offseason in the NFL, which was pretty unprecedented. But with all the new quarterbacks coming into the draft and all the teams that may be looking for a quarterback this year, I think Cam Newton will end up somewhere. I don't know if it's the Patriots, because I do think Bill Belichick has a master plan that we won't know about it until it's all over, similar to him bringing Cam Newton there. But he's just going to have to play out the season, and he's right. Just focus on the next week.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Good stuff today. Nick Wright's my buddy. First things first. He's going to join me now. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. And Nick Wright is now joining me. So it's interesting. Sometimes, Nick, you get these trades in any sport, could be any sport, and it just doesn't make that big a news. And we are in the middle of an NFL season, and so an NBA trade is big on Twitter, but it's not going to be on our shows very much. And I look at what the Lakers did by getting Dennis Schroeder, and I said this last week, I'm like, wow, that's like a huge move for a defending champ to massively upgrade from a position point guard that can run the show. And then they add Montrezl Harrell and Mark Gasol, is a very good low post defender. And I wake up this morning and I think to myself, does everybody understand that the defending champs got significantly better over the weekend? Am I hyperbolic here?
No.
Did you see the same thing?
You're not hyperbolic at all, and it's great to talk to you as always, Colin. They are the massive favorites. They were the favorites before free agency. Now you have to ask yourself if you could have them or the field. Would you rather have the Lakers or all 29 other teams? I think they're the favorites against the field. Here's the story for LeBron James teams the last decade. Can you survive the 6 to 10 minutes a game he's off the court? If the answer to that question is yes, you win the title. And this team not only can survive those minutes, but I think they can win those minutes.
Yeah.
Right now, Colin, Kyle Kuzma is their 10th man. They address all of the needs. And the other element is this. Teams in the West got better, but the contenders in the West didn't get better. The Nuggets lost Jeremy Grant. The Clippers got no better. The Warriors, unfortunately, lost Klay. The Rockets are, who knows who's going to be on the Rockets. The Jazz stood pat. So who? Yeah, the Suns got better, right? The Timberwolves got better out west. But those teams aren't competing. The contenders that got better are all in the East. Milwaukee got better. Brooklyn's going to be way better. The Sixers are going to be better. The Celtics, I don't think they got better. And the Heat got a little bit better. The one major loss the Lakers had, Colin, is Avery Bradley. And with respect to Avery, they won the title without him. I mean, I don't blame him for not being in the bubble, but there's no question about can they win without him? Well, they did. So, yeah, it was a masterful offseason by Rob Pelinka. And the Lakers, I would be, barring an injury, I would be shocked if they don't win the title, and I'm saying that before the season even starts.
No, I felt the same thing, and I did yesterday. I had nine guys. I said this generally, and you put it better, but I looked at it and I thought, you know, LeBron could not play, and they could win a game. Because with AD, yep, and Marc Gasol and Harrell, they're big enough, and they've got enough perimeter guys they could score. So I agree with you. I will ask you this.
Can
one.
I add one thing
Go
real
ahead.
Quick
Go
on
ahead.
Harrell? Listen, Harrell has some limitations, and he wasn't on his best in the bubble. I think some of that was the rust, and some of that was the loss of his grandmother, which really seemed to affect him. But Harrell's biggest weakness is he is not a rim protector at all, and he's a bad defensive player. The Clippers could not cover up for that,
yeah,
because they had no other rim protection. You know how you cover up for that? Playing with Anthony Davis. And so when Anthony Davis doesn't like playing the five, right? So he's going to be on the court a lot with either Gasol or Harrell. What teams typically try to do is put their center on Anthony Davis, and then what teams would do last year is put their power forward on Dwight or JaVale and essentially say, if you want to run post-ups to Dwight or JaVale because you have a size advantage, fine. If that's not an efficient possession. Montrezl Harrell will eat that alive against an undersized power forward. So he fits with the Lakers more than he fit with the Clippers, given how the team's built.
Nick Wright joining us. So it's easy to blame Brady for the picks, but I'm going to throw something at you.
Was awful. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So Carson Palmer, career high in interceptions. Bruce Arians is coach. Jameis, career high in interceptions. Arians is coach. Andrew Luck, career high in interceptions. Arians is coach. Brady's on pace for 15 interceptions, career high. Arians is coach. As the McVays and the LaFleurs and the young coaches have come into this league, the old school, you know, no biscuit, risk it, over the top, low percentage throws, it's not as quarterback friendly in 2020 as people think. And Brady is being asked at 43 to throw the ball deep behind a hit-and-miss offensive line. Is that Arians is more responsible for this than Brady?
Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely make that case if I was a dyed-in-the-wool Brady apologist. So, yeah, I mean, that's all you've got left at this point. Here's the reality, Colin. If you have a pass rush, the Bucs offense can't function. If there's no pass rush, they can look amazing. Watch the Panther game. Watch the Raider game, the second half in particular. If you cannot create pressure, Brady looks like he's 33, not 43. But the moment there's pressure, even the tiniest glimpse of it, and I don't blame him, the guy's not in the business of getting hit anymore. That game-sealing interception, he wasn't even pressured, but his center had just gone out of the game. I think he anticipated the pressure and got rid of that football. And I am old enough to remember when, if you are giving the ball back to Tom Brady with 2 minutes left, down up only three, your best case scenario is overtime. And instead, Brady had a minute 50, second and 10 with a timeout in his pocket, 25 yards from field goal range, and he punted it to Tampa Bay. And he could have had a third interception in that game that was dropped. He had a fumble in the end zone that somehow was called an incomplete pass. Their best offense was trying to bait the refs into calling pass interference penalties. I mean, listen, man, if there's a pass rush, the Bucs are going to lose. And that doesn't even get to, I'd love to hear, I didn't hear the beginning of the show, I assume you led with it, an evisceration of Tom Brady for once again snubbing the opposing quarterback. I mean, is there sportsmanship dead in America? What's happening?
You know, I didn't even notice. So he didn't shake Goff's hand last night?
Again, you didn't notice. So listen, here's what we know about Tom Brady. When he wins the Super Bowl, he shakes hands. He shook Goff's hand after that Super Bowl. The three Super Bowls he's lost, he didn't shake Eli's hand. He didn't shake Eli's hand, then he didn't shake Foles' hand. This year, he didn't shake Foles' hand. And he was like, no, I only really do that with guys I have a relationship with, despite the fact that when they beat Justin Herbert, they had a nice, long, warm embrace at midfield, even though he met Herbert that morning. And then last night, he pounced and sulks and storms off the field after a loss. So, listen, I gave him a pass for the Foles one, because if you remember, that was the he didn't know what down it was game.
Yeah.
So in Brady's defense, he thought it was halftime. So he's going in the locker room. He's like, oh, damn, I forgot. Last night, I don't know how you give him a pass for it. But, you know, nobody asked him about it because the media is a bunch of Colin cowards that just love him so much. God forbid he asks him tough questions. So maybe we'll find an answer at some point.
Nick Wright joining us. Hey, by the way, so I like Wentz more than you, and I support Lamar more than America. But I was thinking this morning that with Lamar and Wentz, it's not that they lack talent. With Wentz, he's too damn reckless. And with Lamar, we're waiting for him to kind of break through and adapt to the latest challenge a rookie quarterback faces. But this morning I was thinking to myself, good God, I started listing teams that, now remember, these are teams I'm going to list that aren't having private calls or meetings or concerns about their current starting quarterback. And I got down to Kansas City, Seattle, the Chargers, Arizona, Houston.
Yeah, it's not long. Not a long list.
Green Bay drafted a quarterback, so they have him. And Pittsburgh's thinking about Darnold as a backup, so they have him. Could I just say this about Wentz and Lamar? It ain't a talent thing. It's a what everybody in the league, not name Kansas City or Seattle or the Chargers, are thinking this morning, which is everybody's always worried about their quarterback.
So I think that's fair. And I think some of the Lamar stuff is concerning, but there is still enough good even within the bad that you have optimism. It's a five alarm fire with Wentz.
Okay.
When people think of Wentz, a lot of them think of Nick Foles because of the Super Bowl run. But I want to remind America of a different Nick Foles stretch. 2014, 13 games, I think, with Chip Kelly. 27 touchdowns, 2 picks. You remember that, Colin?
Yeah.
That unbelievable Nick Foles run?
Yeah.
There was nothing like that any other point of his career. Is there a chance that we're going to look back on Carson Wentz and say, the dude had an amazing 13-game stretch in 2017 when we said he was the league MVP. But that's just not who he is. He is a turnover machine, 14 picks, 10 fumbles. It's really, really concerning. And if you're Philly, I don't know if you've looked at the contract. I know you study spot rack every night. But next year, it is $35 million to keep him and $60 million to move on.
Yeah.
So he is their quarterback next year. And all he had to do was take care of the football against Cleveland, and he couldn't do it. He hasn't been able to do that. And by the way, I know we're out of time. Just speaking of Cleveland, I'm just curious. Has it dawned on you yet that you currently live in a world where Baker Mayfield's team has a better record than Tom Brady? that washed over you? Have you let that happen?
Yeah, I'm fully aware of that. Not overly happy with it, but I can acknowledge, hey, I picked Cleveland to be 9-7 and make the playoffs, so it looks like they'll win 10 or 11. But I the shock of the division to me is Baltimore, not Cleveland. I kind of like Cleveland. I think Stefanski next to Gruden's my coach of the year, so I think he's done a great job acknowledging what they are and what they're not. I got to run, buddy. Good seeing you.
Good talking to you. See you guys. Bye.
All right, Nick Wright. Didn't see him, just talked to him. Top of next hour, the Herd Hierarchy. Yeah, two things. First of all, Joe Burrow went down. It made me sick to my stomach. I reached out to him. It is awful, and it's worse than we think. But I will tell you this, and it's the strength of the NFL. There's actually great news for Joe Burrow and the Bengals in this, and I'll explain that coming up. Plus, again, the Herd Hierarchy, top of next hour.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
RecTech Grills. RecTech with a Q.com, RecTeq. Smart grill technology. Turn the grill on and off with your phone. Cook with your phone. Stainless steel build. RecTech Grills. So yesterday, when we watched football on Sunday, it was awful, right? You see Joe Burrow hurt. According to reports now, tore his ACL, his MCL. It's really bad. Additional damage in the knee. It's probably a 10 to 12 month recovery, meaning he may not be back until Thanksgiving of next year. That's very possible. So, you know, it looks pretty dire for Cincinnati. They screwed it up. And it was, this is not second guessing. All of us had this fear. It was very much Andrew Luck. Bad offensive line, throw it 45 times a game and get smoked. And he's not quite as thick and as durable, in my opinion, long term as an Andrew Luck. And by the end, he had to retire. Here's the good news. It looks like the draft order is pretty concrete, is pretty established at the top. Jets, Jags, Bengals. That's going to be the top three picks. Bengals aren't winning many more games without Joe Burrow. They may not win any. And the Jets and the Jags, they don't want to win games at this point. I mean, they're not playing Sam Darnold. I think we can all figure out why. Now, at four, the Cowboys are starting to play well. Washington, five, they play each other. One of those teams is going to win. Chargers, Giants, Falcons, Dolphins, Panthers. These teams are too good. They're going to win at least one or two or three games. I think the Dolphins could win four more. Jets, Jags, Bengals is set. Here's the great news. The Bengals, at least for the time being, do not need a quarterback. Burrow will be back. What does the draft provide this year at the number three pick? Penei Sewell, a great left tackle. The Bengals have one really good offensive lineman, Jonah Williams. He's a left tackle. You could move him right. Or maybe Penei Sewell, you move him right. But what they need is the first player that's a non-quarterback available. He's a house. He's Jonathan Ogden. He's an Anthony Munoz. It's a no-brainer. He is the best left tackle prospect probably in several years. So they need a left tackle. They've already got one. Play left or right side. You've solved the tackle issue. Go ask Cleveland. Cleveland got two tackles this offseason. It's a different football team. But here's other good news. When you have the third pick, you have the third pick in all the rounds. If you go to the top of the second round, the best guard in the draft is Wyatt Davis from Ohio State, and he is easily the best guard in the draft. This year, I'm following it very closely because the second or third best is Austin Vera Tucker, who's a USC kid, who's playing left tackle, but he's a guard. Wyatt Davis is one of the best guard prospects in years. So Cincinnati does not have to worry about wide receiver. T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, you're fine there. They don't have to worry about running back in the first two rounds. Joe Mixon, Gio Bernard, good backup. Their defense, get it in later rounds and get it in free agency. You're not paying Burrow anything still. You can spend money on defense. But your two needs are very gettable. Penei Sewell's a great left tackle prospect. Jonah Williams, move him to the right side. He's the Alabama kid who got hurt but played well this year. And then you have Wyatt Davis, top of the second round, probably still available. You can saw between Jonah Williams, Wyatt Davis, and Penei Sewell, you're done. You got your offensive line. These are really high-end prospects. So that is the good news. What you need is available right to you. You don't need a quarterback. And the Jets and Jags need quarterbacks. That's what they're going to draft. And remember, they're not a mile away. The Cincinnati Bengals led Cleveland this year. They lost in a shootout. Cleveland's a good team. They led the Colts this year. Colts are a good team. They led Washington. This is a team that has one massive deficiency, offensive line. They're good enough at running back. They're good enough at wide receiver. They've gotten better on defense. That's free agency. That's later rounds. First two picks should be stars. There's two stars at the exact positions you need. They're really bad. Guard, center, guard, right tackle. They don't grade very well. They grade pretty well. Left tackle, Jonah Williams. So that's the good news. The top three picks in the draft are set. Everything else after that is teams that are just too good. That's gonna change every weekend. Casper.com, code is heard right now. 30% off site-wide. Casper.com, 86 supportive gel pods for back alignment. It's what I sleep on every night. All right, the herd hierarchy is right around the corner. Joel Klatt, Mark Schlereth 2, live in Los Angeles on a Tuesday. This is the herd.